I'm telling these tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I came away.
What is up, Wisconsin? It is day two of the Republican National Convention. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, just outside the RNC. You can catch all of our special broadcast coverage, including the primetime coverage from 7 to 8 p.m. here on Civic Media. You're not going to want to miss that. And we've got all the RNC news. Just head to civicmedia.us/RNC. You'll also be hearing news at the top of every hour from Civic Media's news director, Terry Bell, who is in the bowl, as they say, live at Fiserv Forum. But I am very excited today, and when we set this up to have these two very special guests join me today, we didn't know what was going to happen this weekend, and I think it makes our conversation all the more important. I am joined by former Republican Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin, J.B. Van Hollen, as well as former Lieutenant Governor and Senate candidate Mandela Barnes, two of the founding members and board members of the Democracy Defense Project. Welcome, Mr. Attorney General and Mr. Lieutenant Governor. I'm so happy to have you.
I am happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation. It's been too long since we've seen each other, but to be back in this capacity makes it all the more special.
Yes, indeed. Welcome, Mr. Attorney General. Thanks for making time.
Thank you, Maggie. I appreciate the opportunity to be on.
It was an enjoyable experience for me to go onto the Democracy Defense Project website today and research what you gentlemen and others have been up to in this moment. It's hard to find little moments of breakthrough hope, and I certainly felt some today. I'll begin with the mission of your organization: to strengthen democracy by reestablishing faith in the transparency, safety, security, and validity of our elections process. So I'll start with you, Mr. Attorney General. How did you come together with Democrats and decide, hey, we've got to stand up and do something, not just here in Wisconsin, but in a number of states that we'll talk about? What really was the catalyst?
Well, I worked on something similar to this 4 years ago as well. We hear more and more all the time from both political parties and people in all walks of life, quite frankly, about the fraud in the voting process and how elections are stolen. And the reality is voting is really the baseline of our entire system of government. And I think the most recent violence that we've seen underlies the fact that we really have to focus on the ballot box and not on everything else that's out there that's getting in our way and blocking our minds. And getting together with both political parties, statewide officials of both political parties, to encourage people to vote and to ensure them that their vote is sacred and secure and safe and will be counted is really a vital underpinning of our society.
Mr. Attorney General, just a quick follow-up before I turn to you, Mr. Lieutenant Governor. How have you found the reception of that message to rank-and-file Republicans here in Wisconsin and beyond?
You know, I find it to be very receptive. I hear from people all the time thanking me for what I'm doing, thanking me for teaming together with other people to help bring some civility to our process. And the bottom line is whether you're Republican or Democrat, the surest way to make sure that you have a voice in our elections is to vote. If you think there are problems with our voting system, one of the best ways to correct it and make sure that your chosen candidate is elected is to actually show up and vote.
Mr. Lieutenant Governor, again, thanks for being here. As you have gone about this work with Mr. Van Hollen and the other board members, of which I'll go through the list very, very briefly, Governor Jan Brewer, former governor of Arizona, Republican, Governor Nathan Deal, Republican from Georgia, Senator Saxby Chambliss, Republican, Georgia. I mean, John Sununu, Republican from New Hampshire, Matt Salmon, Republican from Arizona. I can go on and on. What do you define as your primary objective as the Democracy Defense Project?
Well, the primary objective of the Democracy Defense Project is right there in the title. We want to defend this democracy, but not just defend it. We want to strengthen democracy. And as the Attorney General stated, if you want your candidate to win, that means you should show up and you should vote. And that is the case for Republicans, that is the case for Democrats, the case for independents and all the like. And the more people that show up and participate in the electoral process, that ultimately is what helps create more confidence in the process. Because when people are showing up to the polls, they see exactly how elections are run. You see how boring it is.
Yes.
You see how, but you also see how cumbersome it is. I've been there at the end of election before, at the end of an election night. I've done election observation for, at times where I've had friends on the ballot. So I've gone there to collect the numbers at the end of the day. And you see what goes into ballot counting, and you can actually be able to understand how incredibly difficult it would be to try to pull off some sort of election fraud, given how, not just streamlined, but given how complex the process is, how many observers are, how many witnesses there are, how many layers there are to reporting those numbers and counting those ballots. So the more people that participate in the process, the more confidence you can have, and the stronger it will be for everybody.
I couldn't agree more. Having been counsel to the Milwaukee County Elections Commission during the 2020 recount, I was in the Wisconsin Center District. I observed the recounting and hand counting of many ballots, as well as machine counting checks. It was meticulous. It allowed for every objection that either candidate in 2020 wanted to bring forward. All arguments were fully heard and eventually presented in federal and state court.
Have you ever been to a Friends meeting before?
Have you ever worshipped
with the Quakers?
No, and but it's person, a little bit
one,
like that.
One person objects.
Yep.
The whole thing, you got to stop it and figure it out.
And that's exactly what happened in the 2020 recount. What is your response as an organization, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, as the Democracy Defense Project, when people say that the election in 20 was stolen? How do you try to focus people on what's next or what comes after that argument is made?
Yeah, but and that's been a huge problem, obviously, that resulted in complete chaos on January 6th. This belief that was, promoted by folks who, had very bad intentions, sore losers. And what we are doing, because it's not about, working to prove that the 2020 election was not stolen, because it certainly wasn't. There were good outcomes for Democrats. There were good outcomes for Republicans on that election night. So we can't just pick and choose which elections people feel were stolen. We'll use Georgia as an example. President Biden won Georgia. Stacey Abrams did not win Georgia.
Right.
So was the election stolen for one candidate versus another? Which one was not fair? So there are so many examples that we can point to help dispel these myths and these rumors that have been allowed to fester and ultimately have been propagated by some bad faith actors, some people with fealty to those who would rather disrupt our system of democracy. So when it comes to looking at 2020, this is more about looking forward, looking ahead.
Yes.
Attorney General Van Hollen, he won by a very narrow margin. I lost by a narrow margin. And this was a result in my election. If I were to be one of those bad faith actors, could have easily said, oh, no, we need a recount. This needs to be reexamined. We need to go to every single polling location. But, the governor won his election, right? Like, I understand. I took that, as a person who put my name on the ballot. Like, I made a commitment to accept the result and understanding how fair the process was. And I don't take the hard work of our election workers for granted at all. And that's what got me to that place. So speaking from my own example is how I intend to make sure that everybody else that I come in contact with knows that our elections are fair.
Yeah, being a good loser matters. Kindergarten rules, right? Mr. Attorney General, having been the chief legal officer for the state of Wisconsin for quite some time, having yourself run in elections, what can you share with our listeners, especially some of the folks listening that may be conservative, about how you personally observed election processes here in Wisconsin, and if you care to comment, beyond the state as well?
Well, they work great here, and they always have, and they're better all the time. As we have election irregularities that pop up, the bottom line is our legislature, our governor, and others, Elections Commission, try to deal with them and make the next election fair. And the bottom line is there was an issue, for instance, in the last election about drop boxes. Well, the biggest question was whether they were legal or not, and Is it really fair if they're used in some places but not in other places? And those are the types of things, as technology advances and new systems come into place, that we work our way through the legislature, the courts, they come up with the solutions. And the next time they are implemented fairly and evenly across the state. So the bottom line is there are always going to be some questions. But those questions get addressed and we end up having extremely fair elections. The cold hard reality is almost every election irregularity that is alleged to have taken place is something that has to do with things that happen to add votes, not necessarily to take them away. The bottom line is in Wisconsin, it's very, very, very safe to assume that if you vote, by no matter what means you vote, your vote is going to count. And if you think there's an election irregularity or that there are others like that out there, then it's all the more reason to get out there and vote, no matter who your candidate is.
I'm going to hop in here. That is Mr. Attorney General, former Republican Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin, J.B. Van Hollen, along with my other special guest this half hour, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Breaking news, police have shot and killed a person a mile west of the Fiserv Forum. That is location for the main Republican National Convention meetings and events. This is west of I-43, a police department from Ohio is said to be involved. Authorities are expanding the security perimeter because of the incident. We will continue to bring you breaking news, but you're hearing it here on Civic Media. Police have shot and killed an individual about a mile west of Fiserv Forum, Fiserv Forum being the main venue for the Republican National Convention here in Milwaukee, west of I-43. Please, if you are traveling in and around Milwaukee right now, take extra caution, build in extra time. And everyone out there, again, in unequivocal terms, political violence is antithetical to democracy. We use ballots, not bullets, words, not weapons. Please stay tuned. I am Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's downtown live coverage of the Republican National Convention. We'll be back with you all in just a moment.
Hey, I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
We better be careful because that election's going to be rigged. And I hope the Republicans are watching closely or it's going to be taken away from us.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's live coverage coming to you from downtown Milwaukee, just outside the RNC security perimeter. I can only say that it's with a broken heart that I yet again report about political violence or potential political violence. Police have shot and killed a person about a mile west of the Fiserv Forum, the main venue for the Republican National Convention. This is just west of I-43. It's being reported that a police department from Ohio is involved. The security perimeter is potentially expanding. Again, take great caution if you are traveling in and around downtown Milwaukee today. My guest this half hour, former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, and former Democratic Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wisconsin, Mandela Barnes, both board members of the Democracy Defense Project. Mr. Attorney General, I'll go to you first. Immediate reactions, either as the attorney, former Attorney General, as a person, to this breaking news. We're actual people here experiencing this together. It's quite stunning.
The Attorney General has dropped out. I just have to tell you before I continue. Yeah.
Thank you. If he can rejoin on the phone, I know we had a little bit of problem. 855-752-4842. I'll ask you, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, your reactions just as a person to this breaking news.
Yeah, as a person, reacting to this news as a resident of the city of Milwaukee and someone who is an active participant in our politics, I just want to wait till more details come out. You know, we don't know the details of the situation. We don't know fully what happened. But it is always a cause for concern anytime there is a shooting, especially in such close proximity to the events that are taking place here in Milwaukee. It's, you know, easy to think that there may be some connection. I do hope there wasn't, but the reality is a person has lost their life, and this is not anything we should take lightly, whether, you know, it's a convention or not.
Yes.
And whatever the situation was that led up to it, we need to figure that out. And I think it should be more than anything, just we should always, there just feels like so many wake up calls. And
yes.
That's what's so frustrating. It's always a wake up call. Everybody should be awake by now.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And I want to thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for pointing out we don't yet know if it's explicitly.
I'm the Lieutenant Governor.
Excuse me, Mr. Lieutenant Governor. We don't yet know if it is explicitly related to the RNC. Again, we don't have that detail. Okay, we're going to go live to our news director, Terry Bell. Terry, can you hear me? What can you tell us about what's happening?
Hi, Maggie. Yeah, and it's important, as you point out, we don't know why this happened yet. So it's definitely the smart thing to not to jump to any conclusions. What we do know is that a police officer from Ohio, and there is a lot of law enforcement from other states here in Milwaukee this week, just because of the sheer vast responsibility of keeping things safe here. This happened somewhere in the vicinity of North 14th Street and West Fleet Street. That's anywhere from a mile or two, as you mentioned, from the Fiserv Forum, the Republican National Convention. This happened outside the security zone. Milwaukee law enforcement telling Journal Sentinel they asked not to be named publicly because they weren't authorized to speak publicly about the investigation. But what we do know is apparently one person shot. Apparently they are dead. What we don't know is why exactly, how this confrontation started, and why fatal force was used. But it's definitely everyone's especially concerned, more so than ever, ever since the assassination attempt on the former president on Saturday, and all the security here in Milwaukee, and the assurances I should say that people are safe, especially inside the perimeter. But you know, there's a possibility that tensions may be rising.
Thanks so much. That's Terry Bell, Civic Media's news director, reporting live from the Fiserv Forum. We'll continue to update you all as we have new information to share. A person shot just outside of the security perimeter at approximately North 14th Street and West Valete. again, police engaging deadly force. I could just tell you this. I used to work in the county courthouse. I know that whole area over by Valete well. And that is basically about where that secured perimeter begins. There is an ingress and egress point right over there by 14th Street and West Valete. So, you know, I'm sure we'll get more reporting from Terry about whether or not there was some altercation, you know, someone trying to gain access. Again, we'll keep you posted. Thanks to Terry Bell, Civic Media's news director. Since we're on the topic, when you heard on Saturday that somebody tried to kill former President Trump, what thought ran through your mind?
It was very unreal
yeah.
to see that notification pop up on the phone. And when I saw it, you know, it only said that, you know, the former president was rushed off the stage by Secret Service.
Yes.
And then actually clicked the link. It's like, oh, wow, this is actually an attempt on the former president's life, which was just, you know, you think that over the course of history, like, we're beyond that point.
Yeah.
But it is completely astounding how it feels as if we've boomeranged back into this position where we've gotten so far from it where, you know, things had, you know, become more civil, or at least it felt that way, you know, and even the time before I was born, right? You
yes.
know, but to be here once again, I mean, I can't think of what year was that when the Reagan assassination attempt. I can't even remember what year that was.
Like 81?
So before my time.
Yes.
But I just wanted to make that point. It was
yes.
before my time.
Yes.
But to be back here is something that is very frightening. You know, for as someone who, you know, was in office, and there was a great deal made of, you know, even my security detail, right?
Yes.
And it's like, all right, well, you know, things are a little bit different than they were before. And there were, you know, a number of threats, right, that would come in. And I wasn't privy to those, thankfully. It would have stressed me all the way out. But yes. There was a reason. There's a reason why our elected officials need their protection. I can't say that it is a good reason. It's a terrible reason that we are at this point. And as I do condemn political violence in the highest terms, also condemn the rhetoric.
Yes.
You know, the rhetoric that gets us to that place.
Yes.
The rhetoric that suggests that, you know, these people are not on your side. And even, you know, Senator Johnson, what he said yesterday when he mentioned, you know, being a clear and present danger. Democratic policies are a clear and present danger, even after political violence was enacted less than a week prior. Yeah. It shows that people are not willing to learn from, you know, these sort of things that are happening, where people, you know, the former president almost lost his life. And
to come out and
push the needle even further in the direction of extremism is something that we can't sit comfortably with. And if our elected officials are willing to go that far and are willing to incite violence or willing to use the rhetoric of division that pits one versus another, there needs to be a real close, you know, examination of whether those people should be in office or not. And I certainly think they shouldn't.
Couldn't agree with you more. My thanks to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Oh. It's so good to see you, Mandela,
good to
especially
see you.
Today. And to former Attorney General of the State of Wisconsin, J.B. Van Hollen. Keep it locked, everybody. I've got just the guest to join us next after this most recent news here on the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage of the 2024 RNC from downtown Milwaukee. Back with you all in just a moment.
This America.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
The revolution might not be televised, but it's on Civic Media's radio network, coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee for RNC 2024. My heartfelt thanks to former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, as well as former Attorney General for the great state of Wisconsin, J.B. Van Hollen, for sharing their time with us and their work for the Democracy Defense Project. You can find out more about what they're up to, as well as an incredible panoply of Republicans and Democrats from across a number of states, including Nevada, Georgia, Ohio, Arizona, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and of course here in Wisconsin at DemocracyDefenseProject.org. Very happy to announce also this afternoon that tomorrow I'll be joined by two additional board members from the DDF, former head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Mike Tate, as well as former Republican Congressman Scott Klug, also former boss of my colleague, Todd Alba. Really excited to host them tomorrow. And again, thanks to Mr. Barnes and to Mr. Van Hollen. We're also getting fresh reporting again from Civic Media's news director, Terry Bell, that the officer who shot and killed a man somewhere within perhaps 3 to 4 blocks of the closest vehicle checkpoint or entry to the secure zone is from Columbus, Ohio. More to come on that as news becomes available.
I have a little bit more on that, actually.
Please go ahead, Brian. Thank you so much.
This is from our man down in Racine, Stu Waddles. Sources tell TMJ4 that two men were fighting with knives at this scene, and the officer involved is from Columbus, Ohio. And they have no reason to believe at this time the incident is connected to the events of the RNC, but apparently there were two men with knives.
Wow. Right now, again, reporting, thank you, Brian Kelly, that this had nothing to do with the RNC. It was just, frankly, kind of close to the security perimeter. Again, we'll continue to update our reporting here at Civic Media. With that, I'd like to bring on an incredibly timely guest. David White, who is a professor at Denison University in the Department of Mathematics in Granville, Ohio. David and a colleague of him, published an opinion piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talking about their research into how police react to protests and what outcome, what impact that can have on the outcomes, not just in terms of volume of arrests, but also whether or not protests escalate and eventually turn violent. Welcome, David. So thankful for you to make time for us this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, really appreciate the invitation.
Tell us, David, a little bit about the highlights of the op-ed and some of the tactics that you have studied. What does your work tell us?
Yeah, so this is based on two papers that we published last year. One of them was in the journal Crime Science, and the other, which is, and that had a sociologist co-author on it, so that's a criminology journal. And the other one was in an applied mathematics journal. Basically, our research used three things. We looked at statistical analysis of protests and how different events will cause protests to either become more violent or less violent. And the events we were interested in mostly were things like whether or not the police were using rubber bullets or tear gas or coming in military gear. And then we did a mathematical analysis where the variable that we were interested in analyzing was called social tension. So it's very related to what the journalist you had just had on, Terry Bell, was talking about, that tensions may be rising. This was exactly the kind of phenomenon we were interested in, to see kind of over time the tensions go up and then they can cool over time, but these certain events can cause them to spike again. And then the last part of that research was a historical analysis of just the United States and how different policing strategies used in different eras did or did not inflame protests. So kind of the takeaway message was that there are really two strategies for policing. One is this escalated force model, where the police will come out in riot gear and rubber bullets and tear gas and try to suppress protesters by force. And the other model is the negotiated management model, where police will have a conversation with protest organizers, work together to designate spaces where the protests can happen, the hours it can happen, try to minimize the disruption, but respect people's First Amendment right to protest. And you know, what all three of our analyses showed was that when police choose the escalated force model, it tends to inflame protests, leading to more tension, more violent protests, more injuries, both to protesters and to police. So in the opinion piece, we called upon the Milwaukee police to try to choose the negotiated management strategy, which has been proven more effective both by history and by science.
Really interesting that you noted as part of that negotiated management strategy or approach, you noted that part of that would also include not just trying to negotiate protest locations and times, but also, frankly, a couple of spokespeople for the protesters to have an open line of communication with police. Trying to think about zones to effectively let some of the tension, the pressure, dissipate as a protest moves, designated zones for some of those spokespeople to communicate and coordinate with police so that it doesn't escalate sort of out of control really quickly. Am I describing that correctly? Because I thought, well, gee whiz, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of what we called for, this kind of cooling down periods. I think we called it in the piece and also in the published paper. I think it's important to remember that, you know, we're all human beings. We're all connected in a system, whether we agree politically or not. And any one of us can actually cool the tension in that system or can raise the tension in that system. So, you know, I was pleased to see that, you know, the protests yesterday in Milwaukee were peaceful. Even though there were counter-protesters saying things that the protesters probably didn't like, nobody resorted to violence. People took a deep breath, maybe turned the other cheek, even if it's tough to do. But any individual in the system can actually reduce the tension in the system. And, you know, so we call upon police not to raise the tension and to try to, you know, make that space with the protest organizers to reduce tensions, but also protesters themselves. You know, all of us can reduce the tension.
My special guest this half hour, David White, a professor of mathematics at Denison University in Granville, Ohio. As someone who has studied applied mathematics as an economist, I, of course, was nerdily drawn to your work and thought, this is a guy I've got to talk to. So really excited to have you here. And I do want to acknowledge your co-author on the piece that was published on July 11th is Chad Topaz. So thanks as well to Chad. One of the historical protests that you reference in your article is the Democratic National Convention, not just the one in 1968 that resulted in extraordinary violence, but the 2012 Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. Tell us a little bit about the differences between those two events.
Yeah, for sure. So the one in 1968 is kind of famous, at least for people who study protest dynamics, as an example of what not to do. So the city of Chicago, they knew a long time ahead of time that they were going to have this convention. Protesters had come and said, we plan to protest. We're going to protest the Vietnam War. We're going to protest in favor of civil rights. And the city basically said, no, you can't protest. You can't have a permit to go anywhere. If you come out, it's going to be illegal, and we'll repress the protests. And of course, the protesters came anyway. So there was no trust built between the police and protesters. There was no open line of communication. The police had just given them a firm, no, you can't. And so when the protesters did come out, what happened was, kind of exactly what you would expect to happen. The police reacted with violence. They used their, clubs to bludgeon protesters. It was just picture all of those images from the 1960s civil rights era. And, what that did was, I'm a native Chicagoan. That's a black eye for the city. That made us look bad. And it also didn't do any favors to the Democratic nominee that year. It looked like chaos was happening in Chicago, so it had a political ramification as well. In contrast, in 2012, in Charlotte, North Carolina, there was the DNC. And in that case, the law enforcement officers engaged proactively with protest groups. They did figure out zones where the protesters were able to be. They had communication, open lines of communication, and they managed the march routes. So the protests were peaceful. There were not these large-scale conflicts between protesters and police. So that was a good look for Charlotte. And I know that in Milwaukee, there was some arguments earlier on. There was actually a court case, I guess, about whether or not protesters would be allowed to protest in a public space. But it seems like, at least yesterday, from what I could tell, there was good communication between the police and protesters. So I hope it keeps going that way, rather than pivoting into a spark and then, protests turn into violent riots.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think the last reports I read, only two arrests yesterday, and the protests were indeed peaceful. That is the point. You point out in your piece that in the 1980s, there was this push to this negotiated management approach, but that in the 90s, we've seen this sort of pivoting back towards this more confrontational, escalated force model. What do you attribute the change to, and where do we see policing now? Is there a common thread, or is it really jurisdiction dependent?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think part of the shift came from a blowback, actually, against the kind of chaos of the 1960s. So there was actually a presidential commission, which, studied all the different ways that police do their work in different jurisdictions and made recommendations. It came out of the White House and made recommendations. And I think that is what led different police departments to change how they were doing it. So a good example, again, is the 1984 Democratic National Convention in San Francisco, which, again, had like open lines of communication and less disruption and violence. I don't know exactly what happened in the 90s. We wrote a separate op-ed about the college campus protests, and we talked about the Rodney King riots. So that seems to have been an event where protests were specifically against the police, and then the police reacted differently than they were doing when protests were, on some neutral topic. And I think, you might have seen some of the same with the Black Lives Matter protests over the last 15 years. But there seems to be kind of a wavy pattern to this where, police will come out with force, something bad will happen, and then there will be a federal commission. There's been at least three or four of them now. So the most recent one was in the Obama administration. They can after the Ferguson protests, and what it came up with again was the same historical analysis and the same recommendation that police should go back to their fundamental purpose, which is to serve and protect, and to make those connections with the community, so that, you know, when they have these conversations and tensions are high, police can actually be a source of de-escalation and protecting the protests and protecting the First Amendment rights instead of a source that's going to raise tensions. So, yeah, I mean, there's been lots of examples. We commented on a few of the other ones in our various op-eds. Another good example, I'll quickly mention. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, David, I can expect to see more research from you and your colleagues in this field, especially surrounding the college campus Gaza protests. The reactions of both administrations and police departments were vastly different across the country and, frankly, had vastly different results when it comes to violence. We're going to have to leave it there. My thanks so much for joining you, so timely. Mr. David White, professor of mathematics at Denison University, also in the departments of computer science and data analytics. Love to have you back sometime and we can dig in more. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, and good luck there in Milwaukee. I hope it all stays peaceful.
As do I. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage from downtown Milwaukee of the 2024 RNC. I'll be back with some sound from Ron Johnson's, tone deaf speech last night at the convention in prime time. Don't go anywhere. Keep it locked, everybody. We'll be back with you all in just a moment.
You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Please move your groups outside or disperse immediately. If you do not, each participant is subject to arrest.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California, well, to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, our live coverage of the 2024 RNC coming to you from downtown Milwaukee. You can check out our coverage of the primetime events at the RNC across the Civic Media Radio Network from 7 to 8 p.m. today, tomorrow, and Thursday as the convention closes up. You can also check out all of the up-to-date news about the RNC at civicmedia.us/RNC. Want to go to the text lines, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Callers also welcome, because Ken Bob from Dailyville had something that actually made me laugh out loud when I read it. Ken Bob says this: "Dear Maggie, I couldn't help but notice that you messed up the title of Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes with Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen. It makes me sad to say that, following the lead of our mainstream mediocrity, I will have to stop listening to your show until you have a public test for dementia and or Parkinson's disease. This is very distressing for me, since I greatly enjoy your show and find your insights both interesting and informative. So please make those test results public ASAP."
That's a big shame, because he's going to be really disappointed, Ron Johnson, when he hears the sound.
I would think so. I am. I enjoyed the cheekiness of your text, Ken Bob. I appreciate it. Jeff from Shorewood also chiming in on the text line, giving a little shout out to Speed Queen Barbecue. Couldn't agree with you more, Jeff. Also, from Andrew in Maine, this about the Democracy Defense Project, my two special guests that started the hour. Ultimately, how do you show the definitive proof that any specific election is fair and true? To those who pay minimal attention to politics, especially, and to those who don't believe anything that goes against what they wanted the results to be. I think, you know, what I heard from both the former attorney general and the former lieutenant governor was this: that this is really a two-pronged discussion. One is encouraging people to vote, encouraging people to go out and see what's actually happening in polling places. The entirety of the 2020 recount in Milwaukee and Dane counties was broadcast live on YouTube. You could watch it happen in real time. Go on out and see what's happening. Take a look. If you'd like to be an election observer, you can call a campaign. There's also nonpartisan election observers, poll observers. You can do that. So there's this push to get people to vote and re-engage. I think there's also what you're seeing from the Democracy Defense Project is Republicans and Democrats together standing up and saying our elections are free and fair. And the mechanisms of election processes are so diffuse, meaning there's a lot of different things that are happening in a lot of different jurisdictions and localities and polling places with so many people involved. It is impossible to rig elections in the way that has been suggested by some. And so trying to approach that from a bipartisan way, I think, is the other key tenet there. Listen, I don't make it a habit of trying to convince people that are simply unconvincible. I think there's an old adage about, you know, trying to debate fools. But aside from that, I think, again, trying to elevate voices that are bipartisan, especially Republicans of note in a state like Wisconsin, to stand up and say, our elections are free, fair, and transparent. Your vote will be counted and every vote matters, is incredibly important. But I can understand and certainly empathize with some of the cynicism from the texter Andrew in Maine. Thank you for listening and thank you for texting. With that, let us take a listen to what I can only call incredibly tone-deaf remarks. This is Ron Johnson last night giving a primetime address at the Republican National Convention. Brian, let's take the cut about slavery first. And take a listen, folks. I want you to listen for this. Listen to the crowd's reaction to this statement.
170 years ago, the Republican Party was born here, founded on the principle of freedom and dedicated to the fight to end slavery.
Okay. And then let's listen to the crowd's reaction to this nonsense about males and females and all kinds of homophobia. Brian, you know which one. Please
Today's
play it
Democrat
and listen
party
to the crowd reaction here.
The party of our parents and grandparents. That party cared about workers and people struggling to get by. Now they are the party of open borders, reckless spending, weaponized government, and weakness on the world stage. This fringe agenda includes biological males competing against girls, and the sexualization and indoctrination of our children.
I don't know about you all, but that just makes me cringe. It's such an exploitative way to address the very real issues that face especially transgender children. And to listen to the crowd's engagement level after that line versus the crowd's engagement level when Senator Ron Johnson explains that Republicans helped bring an end to the enslavement of human beings in this country is awkward, I guess, if not downright disgusting and infuriating. But Ron Johnson had more to say. Let's take a listen to what he had to say about Joe Biden briefly.
Today's Democrat agenda, their policies, are a clear and present danger to America, to our institutions, our values, and our people.
I don't know. What are you even talking about, Ron Johnson? And how do you get out and say that on the first day of the Republican National Convention after the president was nearly assassinated on Saturday? His excuse? Well, that wasn't the speech I wanted to give. Wait, the teleprompter put up the wrong thing. Here's what I have to say about that. I've been speaking in public for a really long time. If somebody put a teleprompter up in front of me with some really offensive things to say that were completely tone deaf to the moment our nation was in, I think I'd be able to ad lib. But you know when it's hard to ad lib? when you're full of it, when you don't believe what you're saying and what you're saying ain't true. Really hard to ad lib then. Really hard to ad lib then. Gross. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network bringing to you very special live coverage from downtown Milwaukee of the RNC 2024. I've got another special guest coming up for you next hour. We're going to talk about taxing the wealthy with Morris Pearl of the Patriotic Millionaires. Don't go anywhere. News, weather, and sports are next.